Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, March 19th. I'm Ray Graff. Time to scour your closets, attics, and basements for hidden treasures, because today we will discuss antiques. We have Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques in the studio to answer your questions. Whether you're a collector or want to know the best way to refurbish an antique piece, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Or, if you prefer, you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But the number again is 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson and your antique questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing antiques today, and Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques is here. Mark has been buying, selling, and collecting interesting things since he was about 8 years old. After running a traditional antique shop for several years and opening a gallery on Broadway in Saratoga, Mark was approached by Sotheby's in 2000 to assist organizing and curating single-owner sales on Sotheby's.com. Mark is a past member of the American Society of Appraisers and has completed courses in the NYU Appraisal Studies Program in Period American Furniture at the Metropolitan Museum. He is also certified in diamond grading from the Gemological Institute of America. Today, Mark travels throughout the region, meeting with clients, helping them settle estates and family treasures. The number to call is 800-348-2551 if you have an antique question. 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Mark Lawson, welcome back, sir.
Thanks, Ray. It's great to be here.
Before we get to the calls, and they're already starting to flow in, you have a big fundraiser coming up.
We do. We're doing as a benefit for the Albany Institute of History and Art on March 30th, we're doing a jewelry appraisal day. We're going to have three jewelry appraisers there, graduate gemologists, just doing so if people are interested in finding out what their jewelry is worth, this is concurrent with a exhibit that we were sponsoring, Bejeweled and Bedazzled, which is the first time the Institute has showcased and displayed their own collections of antique and period jewelry.
Oh, nice. And this event is when in March?
March 30th.
Okay.
And it starts at 10:30 a.m., runs till about 2:30 in the afternoon. And there's no pre-registration. People can just come in and, you know, sign up while
they're
waiting.
Right at the Albany Institute?
Right at the Albany Institute.
Okay. And it's to benefit the Albany Institute.
Yeah. And it's a great collection, you know, also amazing. I don't know if you've been there, but it's a remarkable collection of wonderful antiques. They have a mummy and, of course, lots of things.
Yeah.
Lots of things related to the Albany area and history in the region.
Because Albany was very famous for its mummies.
Yeah.
Mark Lawson is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Well, the lines are really starting to fill up now. So let's go to Vincent in Poughkeepsie. Vincent, you're on.
Thank you. Hi, Ray. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hey, Vincent.
I have a bronze piece that I moved from one state to Poughkeepsie, New York. And in that move, I had a bronze piece crated and moved here. But in that move, I suspect some of the styrofoam they used to pack the piece rubbed on the patina, and it took off the patina in a few places. So I'm wondering, is there a way that I could somehow get that patina back on those spots?
Yes, they can be professionally restored. How big's the sculpture?
It's probably like 2 feet tall and, I don't know, 2 feet wide and 4 feet, long.
Sure. Some, unfortunately, like touching up the paint in a room where, the walls have gotten soiled from smoke or cooking or anything over the years, it's hard just to touch up a part of it. You know, unfortunately, you're probably looking at having to restore the entire surface, which is going to involve stripping the original patina off of the entire thing and reapplying a new patina. Typically, this is done with different types of acids and heat to get, you know, the beautiful old warm finish that bronzes often have. There are firms that deal in this sort of thing, restoration firms, many of them closer to the city. I don't have any of the names off the top of my head, but if you wanted to shoot us an email, I would be happy to locate a couple of places and give them to you. On the other hand, you can also Google's your friend. You can also go online on Google and just search on bronze restoration.
What is your email address?
It's marklawsonantiques@gmail.com.
Gmail.
Yes.
And you, obviously, you don't do these restorations yourself.
For this, no. It's a complicated, very specialized area of expertise. Back in the 19th century, when wonderful bronzes were produced, you know, for instance, at foundries in France. Under the supervision of the artist, the bronze was cast. After it was finished, it would then go to a patinateur, somebody who their only occupation was applying patinas to bronzes. So it's really an art form into itself.
All right, Vincent, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson is our guest. Antiques, the topic today on Vox Pop. And you talk about restoring antiques. Now, I know in some lines, for instance, coins, you don't touch them.
No.
Leave them as is.
Absolutely.
Don't you run the risk of destroying some of that value if you try to restore antiques?
Yes, with many types of antiques, including old bronzes, in all fairness. If you refinish them, if they lose the original finish, you can lose up to 80 or 90% of the value. To a collector, you know, antiquariums, people that like old stuff, the surface of a piece, the way that it oxidizes, is worn, changes over time. It's kind of intrinsic to the history of the piece, and it can show what has happened to it over the years and kind of adds to its soul, adds to its desirability. Once you lose that, you really lose its character.
But I suppose if you are keeping something and you're not really worried about the value, but this has, say, been in your family for 200 years, and you want it just to look nice, then that's when you would go for the restoration.
Absolutely. People ask me that question all the time. If it isn't something of historical importance and you're not worried about losing a whole lot of money in something that's worth a lot because of its surface, by all means, I'm the first one to say that you should do whatever you need to do to enjoy living with something. I mean, that's what's most important.
Mark Lawson is our guest. It's Antiques Today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551, and Trudy is in Bennington, Vermont. Hi, Trudy, you're on.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Trudy.
I have a lot in my home. I want to plan on selling my house, and I need to liquidate most everything that's in my home. And I have collected antiques over the years, and my house is so filled with it. What is the best way for me to? What's the best way to go with all these antiques? I'm like, I need to sell. I need to really liquidate everything.
Sure. The first thing to do is to try and get an idea. There's a couple different ways you can go to get an idea of what you have, to try and get have an expert or somebody that's a professional come in, look at everything, and identify the things that might be most important. The biggest mistake I see people doing is proceeding, selling things without doing their proper due diligence, their background research. And, you know, I love Antiques Roadshow. I've sponsored Antiques Roadshow since 1997. Everybody loves the nice woman. She bought a table at a yard sale for $40. Wow, it's worth $250,000. She puts it up for sale. It sells for $300,000. That's part of why we love the Antiques Roadshow. I can't help thinking, what about the poor soul watching Antiques Roadshow that sold the table for $40?
Yeah.
So you want to be careful. You want to make sure that there's reliable auctioneers that will help you. There's reliable dealers that will.
How do you know a dealer is reliable or an auctioneer is reliable?
Today you have reviews online, which can be very helpful. You can get a sense of somebody. I like to get referrals from other people that have done business with them, friends or family, professionals, estate lawyers. And also, I think that most of the time, when you're talking with somebody, when you're meeting somebody for the first time, you know within 20 or 30 seconds whether you want to do business with this person or not. The biggest mistake I think that people make is they ignore those warning signs.
Trudy, you can follow up. Go ahead.
It's difficult because I'll be honest with you. I have contacted quite a few people already, and they either don't know enough or, I do my research on my end. I'm trying to get. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm just researching on the items that I have to make sure that I get the price for the item, the listed price or whatever. And I'm doing that research right now. The thing is, I have all these items already that are priced in my home from the best of my research. And then who would I get to come in that is honest with
me? What area are you located in?
Bennington, Vermont.
Bennington, Vermont.
So I'd be happy to try and send you some reliable referrals. If you want to email me, I'll do my best to try and help.
All right, Trudy, we'll give that email address in a moment. We have to take a break here. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Antiques Today, we'll be back. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. That number is 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson is here. And you wanted to follow up a little on Trudy's call.
Yeah, just with Trudy, a really great resource that I found over the years is local law firms that deal in estates. They're very often helping people to settle estates, to empty houses, to get everything sold. And they typically have their fingers on the pulse of the reliable people that help buy and sell things, auctioneers, appraisers in the area. So that's a great place
that's
to start
idea.
To try and get some good referrals.
This came in via email from Carolyn. Carolyn writes, I have an inherited occasional chair with the original horsehair seat and damaged by movers many years ago. What is the best way to deal with the upholstery? Try to preserve it? If so, how? To just remove and put on new fabric. One front leg was broken off. My frugal grandmother repaired it by reseating the wood and securing it with a long screw. Should the leg be replaced or repaired by a restorer with careful gluing? On the left in the photo, which I will show you in a moment, the broken spindle was saved. We don't plan to sell this, but I'm curious as to whether to invest in restoration or not. There's the picture, Mark.
Yep.
Which is really helpful for those listening on the radio.
A nice mid to probably 1860s era, probably mahogany veneer American side chair, almost a Gothic or Renaissance revival. A beautiful thing. For something like this, it's going to be a labor of love. Today, it's a chair that in perfect condition may not be worth even $100. So, but if it's something that you really want to restore and want to restore properly, there are specialty restorers that upholsterers that specialize in antique furniture that will replace the horsehair and do everything. But it's really what you feel you want to do because it's going to be a labor of love. The money that you put into this, you'll never get back out. It's only going to pay off to you in terms of the satisfaction that you're going to get.
Mark Lawson is our guest. It's Antiques Today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Deb in Lenox. Deb, you're on.
Oh, hi. Good afternoon. The reason I'm calling is we recently had a death in the family, and the person who passed away collected vintage and antique radios, hundreds of them, as well as some kind of vacuum tubes or some kind of tubes for radios as well. I know there's people that collect this stuff. I've done a little bit of Google searching, and I'm already overwhelmed trying to figure out what this stuff is valued at. Is there some place I can go, and if I need to email you offline or something, is there like some sort of specialist in the Capital District area that can, you know, truly value these things? Because I think some of them are worth $5 and some of them may be worth $400.
Yeah, sure. Well, this is an area of collectibles, the like many areas that I deal in. In the last 10 to 15 years, the prices have dropped from anywhere from 50 to 80%, which simply reflects demographics. Most of the people that cared about old radios, that remembered old radios, that used them back in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, the population is gone, and there has been nobody to replace them. Young people, while they might find them interesting, they have no meaning to them. They evoke no sentiment for them. But there still are, you know, collectible and rare radios that are have traditionally been valuable and more desirable are still retain some value and are still more desirable than most of them. They're the ones that were made out of Catalan and Bakelite, very colorful in the 1920s and 30s. And most famously, there's Art Deco radios that were made by a company called Spartan that were finished with blue, you know, beautiful blue mirror and chrome, and they're kind of wonderful examples, iconic examples of Art Deco design of the early 20th century. Quite beautiful. So those are still worth a fortune.
Yeah, I think I found one of a. I think I found a Bakelite one.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, and if it's not cracked, because those crack very easily, that Bakelite.
It's
and
true.
So if it's in good shape, they're nice. They're really good.
Yeah, so I don't know of a specialist in the area. There is an auctioneer in outside of Hudson in Copaic, Mike and Seth Fallon, their father and son. They specialize a little bit more in collectibles. I think they might be somebody locally that you could contact and maybe get some good feedback on.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thanks a lot. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Vince in Cornwall. Vince, you're on.
Hi, guys. I've got an old kerosene-type lamp with glass, a round glass on the front and a red glass on the side. Somebody told me that it was a headlight for an antique 1920s or 1910s type of car.
Yeah, it sounds quite possibly.
Is that possible?
It is. It could also have been on a early 20th century carriage. Many of those looked the same and were removable and kind of attached and detached in a similar way.
Right. This has a little flat spot where you can hook it on to a piece of, you know, steel or something like that and take it back off and fill up the kerosene. It has a little about a cup size reservoir on the bottom for kerosene.
Yeah, nice vintage piece.
So how do I look it up? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what it is. I'm trying to, it's made out of pewter, and the whole thing is a kerosene lamp. It's really all it is.
Sure, so pewter sounds a little bit, is going to be a little bit earlier than the later automotive ones. I would imagine there are going to be more in steel than in pewter. I would just search on early 20th century or just carriage lanterns, carriage kerosene lanterns, automobile, early automobile kerosene lanterns. Just play with different search terms on Google. And what I really like with Google that's fun is at the top of the page where it says, when you're doing a search term, you can click on the tab that says images. It's the third one over, and it'll give you a page of just thousands, all the different images that those search terms pull up. I find it very easy when I'm trying to identify something to scan a bunch of images to try and find what I'm looking for rather than read a bunch of text.
Yep. It's the coolest little thing. It's got three little stacks on the top, look like for the chimney. The whole thing is only about 12 inches tall, but it's pretty cool. I just was trying to find out because the other night I saw a movie with a stagecoach, and they had the little lights on the side, and I'm thinking to myself, that's more like what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's more like what it is. So,
well, good luck with
that. Okay.
Glad you're having fun.
Thanks, Vince. 800-348-2551 is the number, and we are joined today by Mark Lawson. We talk antiques on the program every so often, and now we go over to Joan in Delaware County. Joan, you're on.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Joan.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, good. I recently have been cleaning out my grandma's house where she lived for many, many years, and I got a Wallace Nutting, I guess it's a photograph that was hand-colored, called A Sun-Kissed May. Two things I'm wondering about, the value of it, and I'm also wondering, I had thought about reframing it and rematting it, but I'm wondering if that's a bad idea.
Well, so Wallace Nutting was quite a guy involved with the revival in colonial American decorative arts in the early 20th century. And he did, one of the things that he did was take these photographs of very often, you know, streams, meadows, apple orchards, but he also did colonial interiors, you know, a woman at an open hearth stirring a pot of stew, this sort of thing. They're a very popular collectible 20 years ago and before. The average ones would sell for anywhere from $75 to $150, with really good ones, you know, rare ones selling for, you know, several hundred dollars or more. Unfortunately, this is another area of collectibles that the interest in has collapsed, and the prices have collapsed as well. You might have something today that's, if it's in good shape, that's worth $10 or $20 on a good day. If the labor of love sort of thing, if it's something that you want to reframe just because it's going to help you enjoy it, that's fine. Typically, these types of collectibles retain the most value if they retain their original framing and, you know, labels on the back, etc. But for it seems like for a $10 or $20 item to not do something to it to make it more pleasant to live with is silly. So I would encourage you to do whatever or go wherever your heart leads you in this case.
Well, that's great. I appreciate that answer because I think that's what I'll want to do.
Well, thanks, Joan.
Okay, thanks for calling in.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson, the guest today on Vox Pop. Roberta in Troy is on. Hi, Roberta.
Yes. Hi, Ray, and hi, Mark. Can
hi,
you
Roberta.
Hear me okay? I've got you on speaker.
Yes.
Yeah, we prefer non-speaker, but if you have to be, you're okay.
Okay, thank you. Mark, I was calling about modern first edition novels that have been signed by the author.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes inscribed, sometimes not. In trying to learn more about how to who would I turn to for, I know they're not antiques, and I know there's a whole field in antique books, but where would I go to learn for people to consult and people to mentor even possibly for more information about this?
The best guy in books in the Capital District is a guy named Dennis Holtzman at Dennis Holtzman Antiques. I'm sure that's his area of specialty, and he's a really great guy. I've been doing appraisal days and working with him professionally for probably pushing 20 years. What you have to be careful with these sorts of things is the modern books, you know, it's popular for authors to go out and do book signings, these sorts of things. So with the modern books, the pricing can be a little more difficult. That is, you know, some of the things that seem like they should be worth a lot of money aren't worth very much because there's not so much demand for them. An exception to that is, you know, presidential material or, you know, I think the more that somebody is historically important or a case can be made that they will be long-term historically important, that may help the potential value. But people that things that go in and out of fashion, like celebrities that go in and out of fashion, you know, they're worth the most when they're created, when the person that has created them, the person that assigned them, is at the height of their notoriety.
Right. Now, if one were to try to actually get into trying to sell items in, I'm assuming through something like Abe Books or even Amazon, I would want to try to stay away from eBay. And would there be anyone you could refer me to that would be able to help me? I'm reading books on the subject and so on, but are there any individuals that I could look up?
I think you're going to have a hard time, I believe, selling things on a consignment basis, especially with an online listing thing like A-Books that's relatively labor intensive, you're going to have a hard time finding somebody to do that for you if the values aren't pretty strong.
Yeah.
Just because they're going to have to charge you.
I would want to do it myself, Mark.
Sure.
And I often see classes given locally on things like selling on the internet.
Right.
But they mostly seem to be eBay.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know of anybody giving. It's kind of a niche market, so I'm not sure you'll have a easy time finding a local class on how to sell on Abe Books. On the other hand, you know, Google's your friend. You may be able to find even at Abe Books itself online tutorials for how to do it yourself.
One thing I always wondered about this, with regard to books and signed books and eBay or anywhere else, how does the average layperson know that they are authentically signed? What's stopping an unscrupulous person from saying, okay, I've got a book here, it's by, you know, Charles Dickens. Okay, we'll just put Chuck Dickens down in on the front page. I mean,
sure.
Is this common?
Well, it has been a big problem in sports memorabilia, which is why it's impossible to sell any good sports autograph without getting it authenticated from, you know, PSA, DNA, or one of these types of firms. It's less of an issue with the older stuff, I think. But that is a whole subset of expertise among autograph experts, among book experts. So many famous people, for instance, had their secretary sign for them, or Jean Harlow, her mother signed all hers, or whatever. And so you have to know that stuff to be able to navigate it. See, there have been a couple of famous forgers. You know, there was one guy in the early 20th century that was famous for forging historical documents. But mostly, I personally haven't found it to be that much of a problem. It's more the stuff like the secretarial stuff
be
careful.
You see Beatle albums or whatever on auction sites, and, signed by the Beatles. Okay, how are you going to prove that, man?
Well, you need authentication, or if you're going to buy it, base it subject on, you know, a positive authentication if it hasn't been authenticated. And, you know, it's the buyer beware. You know, you have to make sure that you're dotting your I's and crossing your T's and that it doesn't seem too good to be true.
Mm-hmm. Our guest today is Mark Lawson. We talk antiques. 800-348-2551 is our number. And you can also email us at voxpopwamc.org. We'll be back. 800-348-2551, the number. It's Vox Pop. We talk antiques today with Mark Lawson. Mark, this one came in via email from Mark in Clifton Park. Mark writes, I recently had a 5-carat Alexandrite reset in a gold ring with 2 small diamonds and was told it is quite valuable and I should get it insured. What do you think?
Yeah, Alexandrite was the favorite gemstone of Tsar Nicholas. It was a gemstone that I think the famous deposits were somewhere in Siberia or maybe in the Ural Mountains. Anyway, what's remarkable about it is it changes color. In natural light, it's a beautiful green, a beautiful deep forest green. In candlelight, it turns to a beautiful burgundy or claret.
Oh.
So a very striking and beautiful color change.
I got a mood ring that'll do that, too. I got a mood ring on it. It's worth some money.
Oh, good.
Mark Lawson is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. We go over to line 8. Jim in North Pownell, Vermont. Hello, our buddy Jim.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, Jim.
Great talking to you. I just have a recommendation for the guy that wants to have the patina restored on his bronze piece. The Williamstown Art Conservation Center, which is associated with the Clark Art Institute, but is not part of the Clark. They just they're on the Clark campus.
Mm-hmm.
They do great work on bronze restorations, and I just thought I'd put in a plug for them.
Jim, is there a topic that you are not an expert on? You know but little something about everything.
I'm a Renaissance man.
Yeah, good for you, man. All right, thank you for the call. Over to Joe in Western Mass. Joe, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I inherited 2 blocks of ivory from my father.
Mm.
He bought them on a trip to China and then Hong Kong in the early 1980s. So they're not really antique, but I'd like to see if I could either sell them or get an artist to work on them. But, of course, with all the recent bans on ivory, I don't know if I can – I'm worried about finding someone to either buy them or, as I mentioned, work on them.
Sure, yeah. Unfortunately, you were probably okay – you may have been okay before 2015, but in 2015 in New York State, New York State followed the lead of many other states in making – the sale of elephant ivory of any age or origin illegal. Today, the only way to transfer ownership in it legally in New York State and many others is by gifting it to a relative. But back when...
And an artist, there's no way to find an artist that'll work on them?
I'm sure you could find somebody that you could pay to do that. It's just that the where an artist in the past might have used the material to create a work of art that they could then sell, in this case, there's not going to be able to be that profit motive in anything that's done with it.
So I'd have to just commission them to do it.
If it was something like that you wanted, sure, as something to remember your dad by, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're very
Thanks,
welcome.
Joe. Our number is 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson is our guest. And let's go to Patrick in Red Hook. Patrick.
Hello, Mark and Ray.
Hey, Patrick.
Mark, I've actually met you. I've stopped in at your office up in Albany.
Oh, great.
When I had some coins and stuff. You have relatives in Red Hook.
Yes, I do. Yeah, my Uncle Peter was principal at the high school there for many years.
Right, that's what you told me. I have some artwork, some original oils and some prints and some glass stuff. And what I'd like to do is get it appraised for insurance or just to know what it's worth. Do you do that? Is there a cost associated
now,
with
listen,
it?
Now, listen, Patrick, we got to be very careful. We're not doing an advertisement here, but in general, you could say if you do it or you don't do it.
I don't do insurance appraisals. No, okay. I'd be happy to refer you to somebody. I don't know anybody down in that neck of the woods. But I'd be happy to try and find somebody. There is somebody up in Ballston Spa who's pretty good. Danielle Carter at Acorn Appraisals. And I'm sure if she can't, if that's too far away for her, she's a member of, I think she may be even the president of the local appraiser society. If she can't help you, she may be able to refer you to somebody that can.
All right, Patrick, thanks for the call. It's 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Casey in the Berkshires. Casey, you're on.
Oh, hello. Thank you.
Hi, Casey.
Yes, I'm here. Do you hear me?
Yes,
I do.
Do you hear me?
Yes, we do.
Oh, good. I have a what I think is rare, like a drawing, etching type thing from a Shaker sister, either from the Hancock Shaker Village or the Mount Lebanon, New Lebanon Shaker Village, mm-hmm. In that area. And it's about 10 to 12 inches wide and about 14 inches high, and it's original poem.
Nice.
And some very sweet artwork. So even though it's quite small, I believe it's quite rare. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how I should get this appraised, who I should take it to. Thinking of the Americana Museum in New York City.
Actually, there's an auctioneer down south, Willis Henry Auctions. He's the primary Shaker auctioneer in the United States, and I'm sure has forgotten more than I have ever known about Shaker stuff. I would, I beg your pardon?
Willis Henry Auctions.
Willis Henry Auctions. Yeah, they're very good, and I'm sure that they would be able to help you in this regard.
Casey, thanks for the call. Our guest today is Mark Lawson of Mark Lawson Antiques. And now let's go over to Joe in Albany. Joe, you're on.
Thank you, Mr. Graff and Mr. Lawson. I have an oil painting, and I'm looking for someone to come over and take a look at it and restore it.
Hmm. Now, you do restorations, right?
We do. We do. There's a couple of places locally. What size is it?
I'm going to estimate that it's about, I'm taking a look at it right now, maybe 18 by 14.
So is it oil on canvas or oil on board or?
It's oil on, I believe, canvas.
Okay. So with oil paintings on canvas, when an artist creates a work of art like this, the last thing they do is they put on a layer of shellac or varnish. This protects the original work of art, and the shellac or varnish collects dirt so that it doesn't hurt the original work of art itself, the surface of the paint. And cleaning is actually dissolving that layer of shellac or varnish with all the dirt on it and reapplying a fresh layer. There's Green Island has a conservation center that provides these services, and the guy that called in before with a bronze restoration, there's also the large center up in Williamstown, Mass, the Williamstown Art Conservation Center that can also do this. But as long as there isn't any damage, it's should be a relatively straightforward thing to do.
It's got to be very nerve-wracking. I mean, if you do this stuff, so when you're dissolving that layer of shellac, do you get a little nervous?
Well, you have to be careful. The tricky thing is that once you get into works of art in the early 20th century, there were all sorts of weird and different shellacs and varnishes that came on
and
the
how
market.
How do you figure out which is which?
Well, you have to test with different solvents, and then you have to clean it off square centimeter by square centimeter. And that's why it's costly, because it's time consuming to do and to do carefully.
And how far back did artists actually begin shellacking their work to preserve it?
At least the Renaissance.
Really?
Yeah.
Goes way
absolutely
back. Oh, and what did they use then?
shellac.
Just shellac. Yeah. Just plain old shellac. All right, let's go to Vance in Albany. Vance, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Two things. I can help that woman who had the antique radio who was up first. I don't know what your rules are as far as what I can say.
All right. You really can't give contact. We can't sort of act as a referral service, but...
All right. I'll give you a general idea. Contact a local amateur radio club.
Yeah.
A couple of them from the area, because those
That's
are
a good
the
idea.
People that deal with radios.
Yeah.
There's people I know, but skip that.
Okay.
I have Tapestry. It's dates from certainly pre-WW2. My grandfather got it. He was a house painter in New York City. It's unusual. I've never seen one like it. It's kind of a brown linen type weave in the back, coarse, and it has looks like camel hair or buffalo hair or something that makes up the pattern. So it's a light brown background and dark brown making the pattern, and sort of a coat of arms or a crest in the middle. How would I get that appraised and find out what it is? I've never seen anything at all like it.
Yeah, interesting. With the camel hair, sometimes goat hair, a certain grade of goat hair is also brittle and stiff in the same way. It sounds, from what you're describing, it sounds like it could be Middle Eastern, but it's hard to say for sure.
Would it be common for a Middle Eastern piece to have a coat of arms?
If they were made for the Western market, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, and many things were made for export back in the late 19th and early 20th century.
Say it again, Vance.
It's not brittle at all. It's very soft.
Oh, okay. So what makes you think it's camel hair?
I'm speculating. It's long hair. I mean, it's
gotcha.
Probably an inch long or something like that.
Yeah, interesting. I'd really need to see pictures. There aren't any textile specialists per se in the area. There is a gentleman in New York, George Anavian, that I'd be happy to give the contact information for, if you like, who'd probably be able to weigh in on that. And also with these sorts of things too, you can always try the major and mid-level auction houses, Sotheby's or Christie's. There's smaller places in New York like Doyle or Skinner. And very often you won't hear back, but if you have something that's really special, you'll always hear back quickly. So it's a good way to at least eliminate the possibility that you have something really good.
Vance, thank you for the call. Over to Jim in Clifton Park. Jim.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you very much for taking the call. I have a coin collection that I'm interested in liquidating. And in the coin collection, I have 92 proof sets spanning from 1976 to 2018. And I had three questions about it. The first is, in terms of doing due diligence, I looked up the values of each of the sets in a book called the Red Book. But I believe that that's probably the value I would have to pay a vendor if I were interested in buying it. I don't think those are necessarily the values
you're absolutely
that the
vendor
would pay me.
There's that's another
correct.
Book.
How much less than the value that's posted in that book can I expect to receive? Is there a ballpark?
It's tricky because there's truly uncommon material that has declined a little bit in price that you might expect to get 50% to two-thirds of the price in that, or 50% to 75% of the price in that book. There's really common low-value material that there's way, way more available than there's any demand for that could be worth 5% or a few percent of the prices in that book. And then you have the really common material that's there's very little demand for, except it's made out of silver or gold. And it may be more or less or the same as those prices, depending on the daily price of gold and silver. So it kind of depends.
Okay. The second question is it better for me to sell it as an entire set? In other words, with the set spanning from 76 to 2018, or sell it piecemeal?
There are some places that might pay you a little bit for more for a complete run, but most professional coin dealers are going to go through and systematically figure out how much they're paying for each piece. So I don't think it really, in terms of selling outright to a professional dealer, it doesn't really make a difference. They're going to give you the same price whether it's part of a group or not.
All right. Quickly over to Jeff at Cragsmore. Jeff, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure, you're welcome.
I have an old map that stretches across New England from Maine down to the Delmar Peninsula.
It's a big map.
Roughly.
Yeah.
And I can't read the writing on it. It looks like Italian or something. Nove Bilogi, Americana Septenerale, Viti. Delinato, D-E-L-I-N-E-A-T-I-O.
Yeah. So it sounds like a version of an early 16th or 17th century map. If it's an original copy, then it could have some very good value, but this is exactly the types of maps that were reprinted even 100 or 200 years ago.
So the
value is going to depend on the age of the actual age of the map.
And I would imagine there are many experts who can quickly tell you, oh, yeah, well, this is only 100 years old. This is not an original 16th
century. Yeah, and you
can
usually tell by the paper and the way that it's printed.
Yeah.
It's pretty, for most of the reprints, it's pretty straightforward and easy.
Well, Mark Lawson, we're just about out of time here. Once again, we did quite a...
We could do this for 2 hours.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, we'll have to have you back again. Now, you have the big event coming up at the Albany Institute of History and Art.
March 30th, jewelry appraisals.
Okay, and that is...
benefit for the Institute.
Right, and so that's an afternoon thing?
It's in the morning, March 30th from 10:30 a.m. until we're running until about 2:30 or 3, I think.
Now, are you online?
I am.
What's your website?
www.marklawson.com.
All right. And if people want to email you with specific questions, how do they get in touch with you?
Just email us at marklawsonantiques@gmail.com.
Well done, sir. And thank you for being here. Good luck with the benefit. Support comes from Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. Schenectady Symphony, presenting guest conductor Glenn Cortese this Sunday at 3 p.m. at Proctor's GE Theater. SchenectadySymphony.org for reservations. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarriers and fabricators used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. And Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists. For individuals and couples, elementshottubspa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. Well, once again, thanks to Albany's Mark Lawson of Mark Lawson Antiques for being here. Thank you for listening. Great calls, and I apologize to all those people left on the line. We'll have Mark back, and we'll do it again. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. He's no antique. Thanks to Amber Sickles for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. You like to complain about the weather? I sure do. Meteorologist Jason Goff will be with us tomorrow at 2 on the first day of spring. So store up those weather complaints and give us a call. Right now, stand by for news.